Welcome, believers! We are not dead, or well, if we did die, we're back, and we have at least more than one life, not a thousand lives. This is Lucha Lowdown. I am your host, Bimbo Jimbo, James Kincaid, El Jefe of this podcast. With me tonight, as always, El Guapo Jeff Budd.
Been resurrected by Aerostar.
Yeah, but maybe this podcast is doomed to some type of weird half-life, as it were. Apologies for our absence, believers and fans and listeners and all that. Like Gandalf, we were delayed there are reasons why it happened, but no excuses. But we do have a trios of episodes to get to tonight. We are going to be talking about episodes Pet Sematary, The Hunted, and Kill Mill, the most recent episode of Lucha. And we're right off the bat, two out of three of those episode names are awesome. I especially like that they just went full bore and named an episode Pet Sematary, which was essentially a storyline that we predicted when we last spoke, which was talking about the resurrection of Phoenix and Katrina living on behind him. And, you know, is essentially her soul dwelling within Phoenix as well. But Let's start with Pet Sematary and overall thoughts on this episode. A quick breakdown of the matches, as we might end up jumping around. But on Pet Sematary, it featured a Gift of the Gods championship match with Dragon Azteca Jr. and Ivelisse, number one contenders match between Mil Muertes and King Cuerno, and a trios title match, the Reptile Tribe taking on the Super Friends, Phoenix Drago and Aerostar. Overall, what did you think?
Well, I'll just say right now, overall, I didn't think any of the episodes that we're going to cover tonight were that bad, especially with Season 4 standards. I thought important steps were taken in the story. A recurring theme that we'll continue to bring up is how some things were rushed in terms of plot. I'm, as much as it almost seems jarring and a bit forced, I actually don't mind what's going on with Phoenix right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think those are the major points that I would touch on with this episode.
Yeah, to the point about Phoenix, who we're going to be talking about a lot as he features prominently in all three of these episodes, it's not unexpected. I'm actually totally fine with it as well, because I think it befits how that all would go down. I mean, they even joked about naming this episode Pet Sematary, so that all fits. I think my issue sort of with the Phoenix storyline is that Dragon Azteca feels kind of shoehorned into it this season.
Completely.
And so I take issue with that. Although, he's great, obviously, but it's just, it didn't make as much sense for it to be Dragon Azteca sort of taking up to bring Phoenix back to the side of good. I love the Dark Phoenix look, though. Like, the all-black Phoenix is a cool look to show off in the temple. I think that's cool. But yeah, this is what we expected for Phoenix. So I actually think of the storylines, this one probably feels the least rushed out of all of them. And I do think rushed is sort of a common theme for Season 4, like you said. But so we have, starting off, is a Gift of the Gods championship match, Dragon Azteca Jr. taking on Ivelisse. Dragon Azteca trying to continue his sprint towards Ultima Lucha Cuatro and cash in there to become, hopefully, Lucha Underground champion. I really liked Dragon and Evie. I liked the Evie just being in this spot. I think more Ivelisse the better in the temple, from how I sit. What did you think?
I feel like we're almost making up for lost time when we get to see Ivelisse in matches, because she's been gone for such long spurts. The first time I was watching this match, it kind of threw me off, because I felt like Azteca was super aggressive.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like Ivelisse was really being manhandled. And then I was thinking, I was like, maybe that's almost such a technical move by treating her with such respect as an opponent.
Yeah, that he's just not giving her an inch.
Exactly. He gives her no ground. So, I mean, overall, I thought it was fine. It went how I would expect it to, obviously. It's just, you know what it is? It's how this match ends, I guess, or what happens right after this match, where it's like, okay, I mean, we knew this was going to happen, but the really, like, the just because friends is, I think, what we can call them.
The just as predicted, friends. Yes. So after Dragon Azteca did indeed defeat Ivelisse in a solid matchup, Exolicious and Joey Ryan show up, and they now want to be a trios team together and go after the trios championship. And of course, Ivelisse, no stranger to being in dysfunctional or odd pairings. We've talked about this. It feels like they're trying to capture lightning in a bottle again with how they did Angelico, Son of Havoc, and Ivelisse. And it's just, it doesn't work that way. You can't force much as you may want to on Ultra Monthly, which is another fine podcast through the BDNS network. That's bestdamnerdshow.com, iTunes, get your Ultra Monthly on. How's that? Mark should be pleased.
Oh, Mark will be very pleased, except for I don't think he listens to the lowdown.
And so nor should he, because he doesn't watch Lucha Underground.
Exactly. Oh, well, no. Tell your friends, even if they don't listen to Lucha Underground, that they should be listening to the lowdown on a semi-weekly basis.
Agreed.
But, yeah, I feel like they forgot what made that original trios group so good. And it's not that they were good to begin with. In fact, other than Ivelisse, I didn't like any of them when I first saw them. I didn't like Son of Havoc right away. It took me a few matches to really get into his character. Now, don't get me wrong, I love Son of Havoc. I look forward to seeing him. And Angelico, who ended up becoming one of my favorites when he was still active in the temple, I didn't think anything of him either.
Well, and not only that, not only did you not like them, but as they were a team, they didn't like each other. It wasn't just like they didn't like each other and then decided to be a team. No, they were forced to be a team and had to find a way to find success.
And there was a lot of matches and a lot of vignettes that explained that story. And that's why it works. I mean, the entire story was told over the course of season one.
Yeah. So sort of, again, a common theme of this is we saw this coming, but they didn't allow it, you know, and obviously the writers sort of see like, oh, maybe this will work. But instead of, building that out through vignettes or what have you, it's just like, okay, let's plant, instead of planting the seeds of something and growing it, it's like plant the seed and now we expect it to be the plant. And that's sort of the common trend that I've seen through storylines in season four. It's like you start a storyline and then you automatically wanted it fruition. And it doesn't work that way. Like part of the magic of earlier seasons of Lucha Underground was the storytelling was it was given such time and it just really took root. And this isn't taking root. This is just they're just doing it. We're just going to do it.
Yeah, storylines are given time, and they always make references to things that we may have forgotten about, or we would have at least assumed they had forgotten about. I mean, there's a lot of lore built into it, and all of the characters have, like, a very rich history.
Yeah, absolutely.
Including Ivelisse and Joey Ryan, not necessarily with each other, but, I mean, both of them have been around long enough that, you know, we can describe a lot of different things that have happened to both of them and their relationship to a plethora of characters. And Exolicious, I mean, that's already kind of started with him, too, with the whole Jack Evans feud and everything. I don't even mind these three as a team. Their look, it just kind of seems to fit together. If they had just given it more time, it would have made more sense.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And to be honest, I think it would have, after Exolicious beat Jack Evans in the No Moss match, it probably would have made more sense if Jack Evans, like, finally begrudgingly came to respect Exolicious and wanted to team up with him.
That's a good point, yeah. Especially because Jack Evans and Joey Ryan team up was weird.
Exactly, and Joey Ryan and Exolicious already had the thing. Not to mention, Jack Evans and Exolicious athleticism is very similar, so they would complement one another well. So
yeah, they could do some really cool stuff, like when Aerostar and Drago team up.
Yeah, so that's what I will say for that. I actually enjoyed this next match quite a bit, even though it was shorter than expected and had one of those non-finishes. But I enjoyed the number one contenders match between Mil Muertes and King Cuerno because it was playing off the history that they had between the two of them. And I thought this, for as short as it was a pretty hard-hitting affair, and I loved the brawling and everything like that. What did you think?
I loved it. I also just loved the whole description of why the two of them were fighting each other. You know, their hatred and anger towards each other. Their desire for the belt. I was just thinking about it today, how much Mil Muertes has had, like, great feuds with almost all of our top guys in the temple.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it started with Phoenix. His Puma feud was famous. You know, he's had some really nasty battles with Pentagon Dark. And then, yeah, King Cuerno. I mean, it's like, that's a real who's who.
Yeah.
And, you know, as fearsome as Matanza is, Mil Muertes is always going to be that guy.
You know? Yeah, very well said. Especially just... And I really like Matanza, but yeah, Mil Muertes is that dude. He, to me, is like the premier sort of force of nature in Lucha Underground. Matanza, they need for, I think more storyline purposes in terms of that supernatural aspect, but in terms of like in the ring and just like what's been played up throughout the whole course of Lucha Underground, Mil's got it going on. In that regard.
Damn, he was looking good, too. He always looks good, but I mean, he looked even more jacked and lean, and it's like, damn, dude.
He's getting that revenge body on now that Katrina left him.
Oh, pay attention, ladies.
I miss Katrina. So then we got Jake...
What are you talking about? She's in the Phoenix storyline.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I guess we've seen her topless, then. Jake Strong...
Not how I imagined.
Yeah, a little bit different. Jake Strong showed up, and he basically said he wants to challenge like for the Trios title by himself or something. I don't know. I wasn't the biggest fan of that, so we can just move right past it. But
you know what, though? I will say, in Jake Strong's defense, hey, I'll just fight by myself for the Trios championship. It's like, that is Jake Strong.
Yeah, that's fair. And also, the last time he was in a Trios match, it didn't go so well for him, so you can't trust anybody.
He did a Thanos fine, I'll do it myself attitude thing.
Trios title match, the Reptile Tribe taking on the Super Friends. I thought this was a good and a fun main event, and circling back to the Phoenix thing, it didn't feel forced to have the churn right there. I mean, you could have stretched it out, like, maybe over another match or two that where it's, like, teasing of it or something like that, or maybe this one's more of a miscommunication, or maybe more of an internal struggle where you see him doing some stuff to help him, and then ultimately he doesn't or is not...
Yeah, it feels like we don't have our Phoenix at all.
Yeah, no doubt about it. There's not even, like, a little bit of him.
Yeah, that's very weird.
And he did wrestle an entirely different style than we're used to seeing.
Mm-hmm.
He walking around like a zombie. It was almost like, yeah, like Katrina has total control, but was getting used to how to like sort of work the machine. You know, she, what were those machines called in Pacific Rim?
Oh, the Jaegers.
The Jaegers. Yeah. She was still trying to figure out how to work Phoenix's Jaeger. Not a euphemism. I don't know what Phoenix's Jaeger looks like or if Katrina's ever worked it, but she certainly wants to. So she's trying to figure... What did you think about this?
I think a lot of things about this match. One, we got to remember, this is the Super Friends going up against the Reptile Tribe again, and they don't really seem to emphasize how great that feud at one time was.
Yeah.
And then you also have to remember, this is almost a completely different Reptile Tribe that they're going against, which is kind of heartbreaking.
That's a good point, and it actually struck me during this most recent episode just how far, how much we were singing the praises of Jeremiah Crane, and now for him to be Jeremiah Snake for reasons that still aren't known to us.
They don't seem to know either.
It just bums me out.
And it's funny that you should say that, because when you were talking about Phoenix and him changing like his move style and everything like that, I feel that when Jeremiah walks to the ring, he's like, oh yeah, my character's a zombie. So he does like real zombie stuff. But then as soon as the match starts again, he's just Jeremiah Crane.
Is he supposed to be a zombie?
They've kind of talked about it, and they even talked in the most recent episode about the venom in his veins and like sort of like resurrection or something like that. He's a zombie. He could be like a voodoo zombie. I don't know what kind of zombie he is, but there's something to him. And then like his whole look, I don't know if you played Mortal Kombat X, but he kind of looks like any of the characters that became Revenants.
Yeah.
And which is awesome. Don't get me wrong. And anytime I can compare Lucha Underground to Mortal Kombat, all the better.
We encourage that. Absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah. This is what we want it to be. But I don't know. It doesn't feel right to me. And it's just, boy, what a random character to put with the Reptile Tribe. If we're talking about random pairings and team ups, this is another one where it just came out of nowhere. And then Daga, I mean, it was just nice to see him again, when he finally like just came back. But I don't understand his character or his story or why he's doing any of the things that he's doing. None of it makes sense.
Yeah, and why did we spend all that time building up Vibora?
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
I want answers, and I'll never get them.
That's an issue. Post-match, after Phoenix betrayed the team, he shoved down Melissa Santos, and then, as we were talking about, Dragon Azteca shows up to make the save and check on her. again, just forced. I know we had the vignette this season. It'd be one thing if it was already established prior to the storyline that Azteca and Melissa were friends or Azteca and Phoenix, but it wasn't.
Yeah, this would you know how this would have worked better is if Puma was still around and it was Puma doing the stuff that Phoenix is doing, just because they used to be trios champions together. There was a weird rivalry between the two of them, but they never came to blows. It was Puma and Ray, so they could have stayed friends, especially because they're both young guys. You know, yeah. So they kind of considered each other peers. Azteca was definitely always in the shadow of Puma, though.
Yeah.
It just, yeah, I mean, that's how I feel like that would have made more sense. It's like, and it's not that Phoenix doesn't have friends. He has friends. He has two friends, Aerostar and Drago. And neither one of them is Azteca.
Yeah, exactly. Very well said. We did get a postscript vignette with Marty the Moth in Antonio's office, making essentially at first the same deal that his sister Mariposa made to get a Gift of the Gods title match, and then he put down another stack of money and say he wants something a little different, a little extra. And then we fade to black, and we go into the next episode that we have to talk about, which is The Hunted. And a quick breakdown of the matches that we got on The Hunted. We got Phoenix and Aerostar. We got a Gift of the Gods title match, Marty the Moth, and Dragon Azteca. And then we got the triple threat Lucha Underground title match, Pentagon, Mil Muertes, and King Cuerno. And then we got a bonus match that James was not thrilled about. I'll say this. This episode, and you liked it more than me. You liked this episode more than I did. This episode bothered me. Because I feel it undid some things about Lucha Underground's past that were really cool and different.
Yeah.
And also just, again, the rushing aspect of it is,
it's blatant, yeah.
Yeah, they could have done what they did to end this episode in the next episode. That to me, and then especially, this episode ages even more poorly given what happened in this most recent episode and who's going to be challenging for the Lucha Underground Championship at Ultima Lucha Quattro, in my opinion. But let's get to it. overall thoughts on this one to you.
Well, yeah, overall, I think I liked it more than you. I don't agree with the changes they made, or I guess their approach to things that were kind of already accepted as canon. I'll try to defend it as we go on in the story of this episode, but I feel like it at least fit with the characters and what they were doing. And I really do like the idea of the Moth Tribe using their gold.
Agreed.
To kind of, you know, grease palms and get things going in there. I really wish all the tribes really had more of a distinctive character. And that it was used more consistently.
I completely agree about them. We've talked for a long time about how much we love that the Moth Tribe is like the wealthy one. And that's, that's really how Marty and Mariposa would get on in life anyway, because they're so messed up, they would need a lot of money.
Well, yeah, Marty the Moth is the kind of person where if you really dug into it, there's like a trail of all sorts of shady things that have happened and that his family has just kind of paid to cover it up.
Have we compared him to Matt Damon's character in Family Ties before? Or something like that.
Oh, School Ties.
School Ties, yeah, that's right. He's just that kind, or like Philip Seymour Hoffman's character in Scent of a Woman. He's worse than that, but he's got that kind of family money and they have that kind of influence,
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's an incredibly old and powerful family that is extremely established and in all the inner workings of, everything that it is. I mean, his family are the kind of people that they have like dinner with senators and things like that, and world leaders from like other countries.
I think we've even talked about. I think we speculated that Councilman Delgado would have been like a Moth Tribe member,
Or at least in their on their payroll,
in their web. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Which I wouldn't be surprised at all if you had some moths that. Yeah, because I don't know if any. Well, maybe. Yeah, he could have easily been one of them, or yeah, at least in their control. I always considered the siblings to be kind of like the, what was their name? The Ashfords from Code Veronica, the Resident Evil game.
Yeah.
It's like this weird, creepy family, weird, is it possible, incestuous stuff going on, and then just sort of secluded and, yeah, very powerful.
So that's how it is in their family. So we did kick off this episode with Phoenix taking on Aerostar. This is another one of those things where we're getting that. I mean, already? You know, like, I would have preferred, like, a vignette trying to talk some sense into him or something like that, but nope, we're just getting...
They're going to kick some sense into him.
I guess so. So we get Phoenix versus Aerostar.
Because according to Vampiro, Aerostar's been working on his kicks.
Yes.
So keep an eye on that.
More zombie Phoenix in this match. I mean, I thought this was a good match. I mean, obviously, they're two phenomenal performers. Phoenix beat Aerostar with his new finisher, the Black Fire Driver, which is freaking sick. I really like that. But yeah, I mean, it was in terms of just match quality, it was a good way to kick off the show. But what did you think about them and just then the sort of the continuation of the story here?
Yeah, I almost wish that instead of it being a match, it's just Aerostar in the ring and he's asking Phoenix to come down and he's talking to him and it almost turns into a match.
Yeah, like a brawl.
You know, because Phoenix isn't going to listen to him. And then it's like, all right, you know, maybe even Cueto comes in and he's like, ah, ring the bell and just let's turn this into something.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, like you said, they're two very talented performers. I actually, not only do I like seeing those guys team up together, I like to see them kind of face off against one another, Aerostar, Drago, and Phoenix. And the match went exactly how it was supposed to. There was no way that Aerostar was going to be able to defeat Phoenix. As much as I love Aerostar, power-wise, I consider him the weakest of the three.
Really?
Because I feel like Drago is supposed to be more powerful, and I feel Phoenix, of course, he's Phoenix. He's one of the top guys.
You know what's interesting to me is that from a power level standpoint, I feel like Aerostar was rising the most until this season. I feel like he has gotten vastly, in what looked like he might be reaching his zenith of importance and power level, he's just drastically decreased this season, in my opinion. I would have put him ahead of Drago coming into this season.
Yeah, see, but like what I think of with Drago is you have to look at the lore and everything, and I feel like Drago is one of the generals of the Reptile Army like millennia ago. And, you know, how sought after he was by the Reptile Tribe again.
Dude.
And, I mean, Phoenix is always going to be one of those top-tier guys. That's just how it is. I feel like Aerostar has more importance to me outside of the ring. Like, with vignettes speaking about timelines.
No doubt about that.
Hiding the gauntlet, things like that.
I would have even argued that because of those storylines that he might have been the most powerful of the three. Again, not inside the ring, but in terms of like supernaturally.
If you're talking about all the powers, yeah, I mean, yeah, you can
travel through time.
Yeah, exactly.
Plus, I hear he can cut guns in half with his mind.
Well, I don't remember hearing that.
That's a Mystery Men reference for all you true believers out there. Watch it if you haven't seen it.
Well, I mean, Aerostar is terribly mysterious.
Yeah, he is. He's like the Sphinx. But
yeah, that's why we can't read him.
Yeah, there was no way that Aerostar was going to win this match. But it sort of to my point, Drago and Aerostar both, and we'll get to that in the most recent episode, but they come off just like kind of like clowns against Jake Strong.
Oh, dude, that was one thing I wanted to bring up about Drago, though. In the trios match where Phoenix was clearly starting to turn, I was just looking at Drago's like body language and facial expressions. Drago had zero patience for Phoenix turning evil, and it's like, wait a minute, Drago.
That's exactly what we talked about too. Where he's like, and he's gonna be all butthurt about it.
You just came back from viciously fighting against them.
And you left for a whole week not thinking that you would ever return because you found himself, atone for your sins. It took you six whole days. Wow.
And he probably wasn't looking for himself all 6 days.
No, he probably spent like the first couple of days like playing Xbox or PlayStation, having like a bunch of cheese. You know, it's just... Ugh. Yeah, no, that's funny. I actually didn't pick up on that. I'll have to go back and rewatch
that. Watch that again and just look at him, like, shaking his head and everything.
It's like, can't trust
of
anybody.
Of all people, Drago, I expected you to understand.
You can't, if you know, with friends like these, who needs enemies? Poor Aerostar has been betrayed by all of his friends.
You think you'd understand what it's like to act different.
Nice. So, post-match, Phoenix, you know, takes out Aerostar even further, and then he confronts Melissa, and that brings out Dragon Azteca to make the save, and then Phoenix lays him out with a Black Fire Driver on the floor, beats the crap out of him, Antonio Cueto says he's in no condition to defend his title, so he's going to have to forfeit it, which... What? Okay, that seems a little extreme.
Well, I mean, only because I would say that there's money in Cueto's hand. Yeah. Otherwise, maybe he would say postpone it or something like that.
Well, also just making the choice for him that he was going to forfeit it, but maybe that's because he was so paid off by Marty the Moth. But Azteca wants to go forward with it, and at this point I was like, oh no, the writing's on the wall here, which, and we love Marty, but there's no way Azteca's winning this match, and he didn't. Azteca.
Well, I was thinking when the ambush, or not the ambush, but when Phoenix actually took out Azteca, Marty the Moth is watching backstage and just going, I don't think I used to hate that guy.
So you just did me a big favor.
Like, I owe you a thank you fruit basket, Phoenix. Thank you.
And so, you know, Azteca gets to look.
And then you know what? It's women, isn't it? You know, it's like that's we could have been friends this entire time.
He's like, we don't have that much in, you know, different after all. You know, we can be fast friends. You want to bang my sister? I have. So Azteca gets to look like the, you know, the valiant baby face before ultimately being defeated by Marty Masso, new Gift of the Gods champion. Azteca falls short in his race to Ultima Lucha Cuatro. And so what did you think about that, about the change there?
Well, like you said, the writing was on the wall. And I just... You had that feeling that Azteca couldn't just keep the belt the entire time, that something was going to happen where he was going to lose it. And I was thinking, in terms of circumstances and also quality of opponent, I didn't mind it.
Yeah, no, and I like Marty and everything like that, but in terms of, I think we're getting very close to Ultima Lucha Cuatro.
Which I also did not realize. This seems to all be going by incredibly fast. Not even just the story anymore.
Yeah, so, but with that being said, we're so close that I almost would have rather him just kept it. But especially with what they do in the final episode that we're going to talk about tonight. But we did get a rabbit tribe or rabbit vignette with Paul London meeting with the White Rabbit and El Bunny. And, yeah, what'd you think?
Just, I don't know what's going on with the Rabbit Tribe. I would have had no problem with them introducing more characters, and why can't the Rabbit Tribe just be the most populated tribe because they're rabbits?
As it should be, yeah. They're multiplying like rabbits.
Exactly.
I agree with you.
Yeah, this whole thing's kind of weird, and, like, I miss everybody, you know? And I miss Paul being less sinister and more just psychedelic and goofy.
Yeah, I agree, and I think the whole sacrifice to the gods thing, while cool, it seems like just a means to an end to write people off that they had scheduling conflicts with, probably.
Yeah.
And with a few exceptions, they but that's sort of what I take from it. But it seems that the White Rabbit and El Bunny are going to be coming to the temple. That's what they did there. And I love the guy that portrays the White Rabbit, by the way. He's a wrestler called Killer Cross, and he is really, really talented. Great on the mic, great in the ring. I'm a big fan of his, so I'm excited to see what he does. But again, it just sort of speaks to the sort of nonsensical and very sort of just head-spinning nature of some of the storytelling in Season 4. That brought us to the Lucha Underground Championship match, Pentagon Dark defending against Mil Muertes and King Cuerno. I mean, this is a star-studded match. It only got 6 minutes. I would have liked to have seen it get more time, but, you know, given what happens afterward, that's sort of understandable. But this is the first time in his reign where I was really worried about who would be coming out on top after we get a title change with Gift of the Gods. It sort of shifts everything on its axis. But then again, I reflected on the fact that Marty the Moth had dreamt about Pentagon and stuff. I was like, okay, well, I think he's still got a pretty good shot. And he did. He ended up beating Mil Muertes and King Cuerno. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I thought the match was too short with the three of them. I would have liked all of them to be able to showcase a little bit more. Like you, I was wondering if Pentagon was going to win going into this match also, and I had forgotten about Marty, really, and, you know, his sort of rivalry with Pentagon. You know, you break everybody's arms, this is what happens.
Yeah, everybody hates you.
So, like, as soon as I was in this match, I wasn't even thinking about Marty or anybody else. And I was like, you know, now actually wouldn't be a bad time to let somebody else actually have a shot at it. And I really would have liked it to have been King Cuerno.
Me too. Well, and that we'll talk a little bit about that in the next episode also. But Pentagon did prevail. Marty shows up post-match, beats him down, and Antonio shows up and says that Marty persuaded him to lift the one-week notice rule. I am livid at this point. I know that's the extra money that Marty paid, but
yeah.
To me, one of the all-time great Lucha Underground moments, and it was a small one, but it's one that we have referenced often, is when Dario said, "You can't just cash it in whenever you want." And it was such a sort of just a great sort of, this is different. It was a staking its claim for Lucha Underground that this thing that we have over here is different than what the other guys are doing. And we don't want to be accused of ripping off what they're doing. And that's like, actually, yeah, we're going to go back on all that. And that bothered me because I felt like it cheapened the gift. I feel like the Gift of the Gods championship this season has been disrespected in general in a certain way.
Yeah, I would say this to me seemed less egregious than how they were just handing medallions out like candy a month or two ago.
And then, you know, eliminating people from the Gift of the Gods match itself.
Yeah, which I was trying to think of it just more of like what the ceremony of it would be. Each tribe with its medallion being held by their chosen champion, all of them meeting. I always assumed like in some sort of like battleground or the top of like, you know, one of those Aztec pyramids or something like that. And then they fight to the last man standing. All the medallions are put together. And then the gods bless that warrior with, you know, gifts to have the opportunity. In this case, it's to go after the championship. In centuries past, who knows what it was for, you know? And it's like, I heard that the medallions can even grant immortality.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking the having to wait a week before you can get the championship, I don't know if that had something to do with the powers or if that was more ceremony also. And it's like, it kind of is a bummer. Because we love the lore so much that they really should be respecting that in the story. But at the same time, I get it with the Antonio Cueto character that he really seems to, you know, balk at tradition and he doesn't have respect for the gods. Although at the same time,
He sacrificed his son.
But I almost feel like he sacrificed his son just to get this power. Like he uses the gods as a tool as well. And so, like, his fall is going to be hard.
I hope so, because I don't like Antonio Cueto.
I don't like him at all. And I don't know if I'm just looking at him differently now or what, but he seems more cartoonish now than he did when he first showed up.
He's
like,
getting
the
more
wig
and
looks
more
different.
Yeah.
It looks cheaper.
I feel like he looks like he's freezing in that ice house. It's like, I think I've referenced H.P. Lovecraft Cool Air before, or maybe just to you personally, but I feel like he's a character that's like, he's being kept alive because he's in this ice house, and he looks more and more like Mr. Bigglesworth and Dr. Evil in their cryo chamber every week, it seems.
Yeah, it's bizarre. I need that explained to me, too. That's the one story this season I wouldn't have mind ending shortly. And yet it just keeps going.
It keeps, it's just going to be the whole season. I miss Dario. So Marty cashes in, and then they're having a back and forth. It looks like Pentagon actually still might be able to win, but then Chelsea Green arrives. She's a wrestler. She's been in WWE. She's been in Impact. She's currently dating Zack Ryder. She shows up and she looks like she sort of like what I immediately what how she was moving and everything. I was like, oh, is she the one leaving all those spiders for Sexy Star? Because just
well,
how
and
she
they
was
mentioned a spider thing with her too. I thought
I think they did, but that was just even just how she moved seemed very spider like. And
yeah, that's creepy.
And she definitely was very creepy, but also very random. She helps Marty the Moth defeat Pentagon. We have a new Lucha Underground champion. It is Marty the Moth Martinez, which on the one hand, I was super excited for Marty because we love Marty and we've been such big fans of his. He's been great to the show. He's come on a couple times. So it was a legitimately very cool moment for him to win. I just wish they had done it differently. What say you?
What if, because of the way he acquired the championship, when he actually has to defend it, I don't know, something bad happens to him, or it shows that he doesn't have the favor of the gods.
That would be very interesting.
I just thought of that.
That would be...
Because he didn't acquire it the way that
he's supposed to.
Is known through legend, exactly.
That would be very compelling. I wonder how they would tell that visually.
I don't know if part of it would have to be done in a vignette. I don't know if it's something that the return of Dario could explain or what. Or maybe you just even have Vampiro be able to theorize.
I would think that almost it would be something after he loses it where they do a vignette where it's maybe the gods take control of Matanza and send him to come for Marvel.
That would be interesting. Yeah, maybe Antonio, getting paid off again, tries to send Matanza after the Challenger. And then instead of going after the Challenger, goes after Marty.
Yeah, like a Reaper. Like the guy.
And then maybe even goes after Antonio for the same thing.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
Live by the sword, die by the sword. Maybe the gods send Dario back because of this.
That would be cool, too.
I don't know. I hope so. Gotta get resurrected somehow. But that is how The Hunted ended.
Injected with snake venom.
New Lucha Underground champion. I mean, that was huge. Pentagon didn't make it all season with the championship. Which is
He's no Puma.
Which is totally fine. I didn't expect him to, and he had a great run. It was surprising that Marty was the one to knock him off. I think I referred to Marty as sort of a monster of the week contender for Penta. Well, you know, shows me. So he's the new Lucha Underground champion.
You know what though? Marty is one of those guys who always gets underestimated because of the style of his character, but when you see him in the ring against certain guys, like I remember when he was holding his own against Mil Muertes.
I do.
One time, it's like there are things. Another guy that always surprises me is Joey Ryan.
Yeah, well, Marty's
he has some pretty impressive stuff under his resume too.
Marty's got that sneaky strength. So
well, he's a big guy.
He is. He's got that special strength.
He should be
him.
Taken seriously. Yeah, that too.
That brings us to the final episode we're going to talk about tonight, which is Kill Mil. Matanza faced, well, sorry. getting a little ahead of myself with my notes. We had a Trios Championship match, the Reptile Tribe taking on the new flavor of the month, Trios Shoehorn Team, Joey Ryan, Ivelisse, and Exolicious. Then we had a Nunchucks Handicap match between Jake Strong, Drago, and Aerostar. Spoiler, I hated it.
We're just throwing darts at the idea board.
Dude, it's Vince Handicap, Russo.
Nunchucks.
The only thing handicapped is the amount of time they're taking to tell these stories. And then we had a number one contenders match for Ultima Lucha Quattro between Pentagon, Mil Muertes, Dragon Azteca, and King Cuerno.
Real who's who there.
Yeah, but we begin the episode...
Although, didn't we just see that match without Azteca?
Yes, we did. We literally just did. We begin with Matt Stryker reading a letter from Antonio Cueto setting up the main event that I just mentioned. And Jack Evans begins it, says that he's going to quit being in Lucha Underground after his No Mas match with Exolicious. He's still butthurt about it.
Dude, let it go. Man.
Let it go, and also I knew exactly where this was headed as soon as he started. And I had heard, I vaguely remember Jack Evans saying on Twitter before the season that he had, you know, parted ways with Lucha and stuff like that, so I was just sort of, my heart sinking, like, well, here it is. He's actually more a part of this season than I thought he was going to be. And Antonio says he's not, he can walk out if he wins his next match or he'll never walk again. And that's because he's the next sacrifice to the gods. And I will say this, Jack Evans acquitted himself better than anybody else did in one of these matches. How are you feeling?
I didn't predict what was going to happen to Jack until he actually mentioned Mundo's wedding and that if he had been there, things would have been different.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh no, Jack. I mean, you had already said on the show that about Jack's Twitter, and so I've kind of been watching this season with a heavy heart because I really do like Jack.
Yeah.
I have to say, though, I mean, at least his character gets to go out in, like, a cool way. So I'm happy about that. And yeah, I liked him trying to escape, and he's pounding on the doors. Then he turns around, the doors open, Matanza's there. him trying to escape down the stairs and then Antonio tripping him. I thought all of that was really good. I'm glad that Jack was able to handle himself at least slightly in the ring. It seemed like he sort of had a chance, even though we all know that he didn't. Overall, as much as I'm sad to see Jack go, I thought it was pretty cool. And it continues to lend credence to the sacrifice to the gods. And now I feel that there's no one else except for Johnny Mundo who's going to have to put a stop to this with the last two sacrifices.
Yeah, I agree.
And the wedding being broken up. I mean, that's three affronts now against Johnny Mundo.
And so what's the end game here for these sacrifice matches? Does
Johnny Cage split? Punch in the nuts. That's the only way you can defeat Matanza.
Dude, I actually think that's a great idea, and I actually think that could happen. Legitimately. Because you know John Hennigan loves pop culture as much as we do, and I would not rule that out as being a potential thing that he does in the match with...
And is Matanza not pulling a Mortal Kombat 1 Goro right now by just destroying guys and then their souls being sucked away?
He absolutely is, so I could definitely
And now
see
it's
that.
Friends of his being taken out, like that one dude in the movie.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So
Then he'll challenge him before Taya, a.k.a. Sonya Blade, gets dragged into this mess.
Wow, that's actually... Hey, good job, Jeff. You just wrote the whole thing out.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And you know what? We could put it all in one episode, too, if that's how they want to do it this season.
And I'm sure that's how they would want to do it.
We'll do the abridged version.
Yeah, no doubt. Next
where,
week.
Where all of it lasted as long as it took me to say it.
Yeah. Yikes. So Jack Evans, vaya con Dios, mi amigo. He is dead. He's been sacrificed to the gods. Well, maybe not dead. Maybe if Mundo prevails, maybe all their souls get released and they come back. Who knows?
I'm kind of hoping. I mean, even if we don't see them again, it would be nice to know that.
Yeah.
I know. I'm all sentimental. And then, I don't know, maybe we could see Mr. Spectacular again. Mr.
yeah, Antonio with the great diction. We do get a trio. This was a trio's title match. The Reptile Tribe taking on Joey Ryan, Ivelisse, and Exolicious.
Why do they get a title shot, too?
I know, they haven't even had, like, a match together.
Yeah.
This was...
Hey, we're already booked for a trios match, like, in 2 weeks or a week. Do you want to come join us? Yeah, sure, why not?
This, to me, it just was to showcase that the White Rabbit, El Bunny, and Paul London were now the next trios team. They attacked after the match, and
dude, I was livid. There was too much going on. This trios team just formed. They're now getting a match for the titles. All of a sudden, another team just shows up on the staircase. I was like, no, no, no. This is too many things at once. I have no problem with you guys getting involved in all of this, but not right now. And then they just stood there and watched the match, and like you said, didn't get involved until the end.
Yeah, I was not really a huge fan of that either. But I'll tell you what, I was even less of a fan of the match that followed, the Nunchuck Handicap match between Jake Strong, Drago, and Aerostar. This got a lot of time by Season 4 standards, and it just, it's the Jake Strong super push, and it makes Drago and Aerostar look like a couple of chumps. They lost. Aerostar tapped the ankle lock. Drago ended up getting his ankle broken by the end. What did you think of it? I thought it was kind of a mess.
I don't understand this feud, and I didn't understand like the story that they were trying to tell in this match, because it just seemed like it was different haphazard spots put together. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's another one of those things where it's like, don't introduce a weapon in pro wrestling if you can't really use it.
Ooh, that too. The way I would have liked this to have gone was obviously with Aerostar and Drago winning this match, but not making Jack look weak. It's two against one.
It's two against one, and they're baby faces.
Very capable opponents.
And why are the baby faces the ones that have numbers?
Yeah, dude. All of this just kind of goes against the grain of what this type of match should even be. I would have liked it where... if we had more time to tell this story... The two of them with their feud against Jack, both of them are trying to go against him in their own way. Neither one's successful. Then it turns out their greatest strength just happens to be Jack's greatest weakness. They have each other where Jake has nobody.
Yeah.
So like their team up stuff that they were doing sporadically through the match, all of that could have been done at the end. The Master Blaster nunchucks, them doing one thing after the other with each other like they always do, where you can't kind of keep track of them because one kicks you and then the other one's on top of you, that sort of thing. All of it was just bizarre to me. And then what was the point of saving one's ankle just to let the other one get broken? Like, that, none of it made sense. It was all weird.
Yep. It all was really weird. I didn't like it. And again, Aerostar and Drago, two OG Lucha Underground superstars being made to look kind of like complete fools. And I like Jake Strong, don't get me wrong. But I'm not a fan of how this story has played out. But we got to get to the main event.
Yeah.
Pentagon, Mil Muertes, Dragon Azteca, King Cuerno for the opportunity to fight for the Lucha Underground Championship at Ultima Lucha Cuatro. I thought this had a lot more potential. Again, it was only given a little over 5 minutes.
Less time and extra opponent.
Yes, less time, extra opponent. I will say the biggest standout moment to me was when Phoenix showed up during this match and Dragon Azteca with the freaking insane leap onto Phoenix, knocking them both into the table very brutally, I might add. But then they both pop up and just start fighting again. I feel like let that breathe a little bit. That was amazing.
Yeah, that looked awesome. Commentary didn't miss a beat.
Yeah. You know,
they just kept going right through it, which was awesome. But yeah, you gotta let that maneuver appear to do some serious damage. Which I feel like they normally do a pretty good job of on Lucha Underground. You know, people usually seem disoriented and they're on the ground for a little bit after something like that. But yeah, it was like it didn't even happen.
Yeah, it's like Phoenix took immediate control right afterward. And maybe the supernatural thing is part of it, but...
Maybe. I don't know. This is the kind of stuff that Jim Cornette, you know, rants against.
Well, Jim Cornette needs to chill out.
Yeah, well, he's not wrong in this case.
But this match had too much going on in it as well. The Mac returned. It's the first time we've seen him since the Haunted House match.
What the hell, man?
And yeah. he like triple stunners Mil Muertes and Bales. So in this match, by process elimination, I was like, Dragon Azteca is not going to get into the main event of Ultima Lucha here because it undoes, you know, they already undid his storyline of getting there. It's not going to be Mil Muertes. He has too much other things going on, other storylines. It just doesn't make sense for him to challenge Marty the Moth at Ultima Lucha Quattro. Plus, it's heel on heel, King Cuerno, who is beloved by the believers, has never been Lucha Underground champion, is this awesome character. I was like, dude, I think this could be Cuerno's night because Pentagon just lost the championship. They're going to give him a rematch automatically at Ultima Lucha Quattro. That seems kind of anticlimactic, and I'm a Pentagon guy, so I was like, dude, this is King Cuerno's moment to shine here. It was not. Pentagon picked up the win, and I'm not gonna lie, I'm not sure that's the right call. What did you think about how this went down?
This match almost went exactly how I thought it would. I knew that Azteca was going to have to do something with Phoenix. Phoenix would get involved, and the two of them would fight, so that would eliminate Azteca. I thought Mil Muertes and King Cuerno were going to end up doing something to each other to help spur that feud. Because when I realized that we were so close to Ultima Lucha Quattro, I was trying to think, okay, well, what matches are we setting up going into Ultima Lucha Quattro? And I was like, well, why don't we just have King Cuerno and Mil Muertes go at it against each other again? I love what the two of them look like when they're facing off against one another. And I was like, you know, I mean, there's been revenge and stuff like that, but I never feel like they really, like, full-on had it out again since the feud had kind of been rekindled. And the only reason they had been facing off against each other lately is because they both had their eyes on a different prize. It was nothing against one another. So I thought the two of them were going to do something to one another where they would rather just fight each other, and Pentagon was actually going to win. I'm not saying it's the right thing either, that Pentagon just automatically gets this rematch, when it's like, why did you have Marty the Moth then even cash in?
Yeah.
The Gift of the Gods, other than to just make Pentagon the challenger, which I guess is supposed to make him the underdog, and then he'll beat Marty the Moth.
Yeah, it just still seems kind of weird, especially to then put this match just 1 week afterward, you know? Yeah. Maybe if they'd spaced out a little bit more, it would have felt like Pentagon had to work longer and harder to get back and get that shot.
Yeah,
back.
I wish there was more time. Oh, and I have a problem with the Mac going up against Mil Muertes again, just because... When can a feud just end also? You know what I mean? Like, I understand, and I thought Mac at least explained it when he was cutting the promo after he had defeated Mil Muertes, that he's no longer afraid of him because of the things that had happened. But this feud started because all he was trying to do was avoid the guy.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like it just should have stayed that way. Mil Muertes just came out on top this time. And Mac can show up again at another point and do something else.
And I completely agree with you. Plus, it's Mil Muertes. So he should win most of his feuds.
Exactly. And I just don't feel like he does.
And the Mac challenged him to a death match, and he said, rest in peace, motherfucker. You know, that's all well and good. And look, I hope Mil Muertes wins this match at Ultima Lucha as well, because he sort of should. And I love the Mac, but it's Mil. Mil is on another level. Other than, like, the only ones that can really hold the candle to him, in my opinion, are, like, Prince Puma, who is no longer there. Pentagon, through pulling out all of the stops. Phoenix, because of their yin and yang thing.
Exactly, yeah. Neither one can ever truly defeat the other.
And I guess Matanza, just because they're both supernatural monsters. But other than that, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I agree.
Maybe Mundo.
Maybe Cage. Maybe Mundo.
But, you know, it's a short list. And even those other guys, like, not, like, again, through pulling out every stop. Yeah. So, I don't know. I'm not sure. It's going to be a great match, I'm sure, if it's given the time. But it was just an interesting call to go that way. But that is where we stand. This was a trios cast, a triple offering of reviews and discussion about what is going on in Lucha Underground. We will try and be more consistent with you in the coming weeks. It's been difficult.
No, we will rush through our reviews like they rush through storylines.
Hey, you know what? That's
next episode will actually just be the remainder of the season.
That's actually a fair point. That's actually a fair point. And on that note, that is going to do it for us this week here at Lucha Lowdown. For Jeff Budd, I'm James Kincaid. Good night, everybody.